Hey, everybody, welcome to another edition of My Darkest Hour. This is our continuing series of the video blogs that we've been doing. Everyone seems to like them a little bit more. And it gives my people who are coming on the show a chance to not only do the video and show off the product they have and what they're selling, what they're promoting, whatever it is that gives them a chance to show visuals. A week later, we also aired the audio to liveparanormal.com. So it gives everybody a chance to really see the video, or if they missed that, they can hear the audio. So you get two shows at the same time. With that being said, hey, I want to really excited about having my guest, Brian Clune, who's an author that you guys have been, he's been on the show multiple times over the years that I've been doing the show. We're doing it so long, I can't even remember how long it's been now. I used to have an anniversary date, but there's so many things going on, it's hard to keep up. So we'll just say a long, long time. So with that being said, let's go ahead and bring in Brian, and let's get this party started. So here we go. You guys ready? Brian!
Were you just calling me old?
No, I'm old. You look great, dude.
I mean, how well, old damn right I do.
You're 36 now or something?
29.
Absolutely. You're youthening. I like that. I like that about you.
I am. It's a speech age, Brian. We'll go to
excellent. Excellent. So, hold on. One second. I had something up here that I was going to run. Where'd it go? It looks cool too. Yeah, there we go. There's your name underneath there. So you've been writing books and you're very successful at books. I think it's a little bit more than just people that are telling the story of just writing a book, getting information they've done the research on the internet or whatever. A lot of the stuff that you've done that I've noticed is more personable. You're not just getting stuff off the internet. You're actually going out to these places, learning more about those spots, talking to the people who actually live in those locations, who actually are there every day. You're not just reading stories that someone put up there because they visited one spot sometime a long time ago, but you are talking to the people who actually live at these locations every single day, getting the real stories behind it, really finding out the history of it, not just people guessing on history. And they do that. It's okay. I get it. But you do real investigative work with that, which I think is totally awesome. So let's talk a little bit about that. Like, when you're going to go write a book and you decide what your book is going to be, what is your mindset and how you're going to approach what you're going to do?
Usually my mindset is, what the hell am I thinking? Okay. But you know what? It gives me a chance to do some things that I have always wanted to do. And it's kind of funny. I really wasn't into history all that much until I started to investigate the paranormal and started to realize that how important history is to what we do when we're investigating. And you know, there, I do a lot of, research, online, as I'm sure most, authors do, but you can only go so far with that. Like with my newest book, Haunted Heart of San Diego.
Very cool.
One of the things I wanted to do, and a lot of it had to do with trying to write a book in the age of COVID. So being in California and seeing so many mom and pop places close down because they couldn't make it with the pandemic and things like that, I was looking for a way to try and give back. So being very familiar with San Diego, my parents are buried down there. So I was little and I knew a lot of locations in there that I had heard had some haunted history to them. So I thought, you know what better than to go down there, start just go into all the different locations that I had heard about, some that I hadn't heard about, and just start asking people, do you guys have any spirit activity? And sure enough, you know, I got the usual, okay, what kind of drugs are you on? Responses. But then a lot of other people started to say, oh my God, I can't believe you're actually asking this. And it started to come out that there are a lot of places that people wouldn't think would be haunted. A lot of them, especially in Old Town, San Diego, that you would walk in and not even think, you know, okay, there's a spirit here, have paranormal activity involved. So like with the new book, we decided that we wanted to not concentrate on the historic locations that everybody knows about. And of course, you know, we put them in the book. We have the Whaley House, we have the Cosmopolitan Hotel, the Hotel Del, and, you know, the more famous locations. But the book is primarily made up of all of these little places that you wouldn't think. One of them, the Old Town Saloon. It's a local bar. And I mean, how many people would go in and think, okay, there's ghosts here? There's a soap shop that I was talking to one of the clerks, and she was talking about how they believe that Thomas Whaley, whose house is directly across the street, comes into the soap shop on his way to the bar.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, so that's what we were trying to do is, you know, not send everybody just to the famous locations, but let them know, look, there are other places that you can go to and look for spirits. And hopefully, you know, find something interesting that you want to buy and help out the shops, especially now, you know, that we're all trying to have a comeback from the COVID pandemic.
Absolutely. You know, and that's a huge thing. You're talking about the COVID shutdown and everybody's locked down and all that energy is just accumulated and just building up. So when people finally get a chance to step out, that energy is like a burst of energy going out there and it's feeding right. everything. All the spirits know what's going on, that all of a sudden there's just a big flash of energy happening. So they're back on the move. I have my haunted theater and I see that all the time. It's been dormant and quiet. And then we started doing the remodels and building stuff. And all of a sudden the spirits are interacting and getting back on track. We did a show the other night there, our first show back. And it was pretty intense. The night before, there was so much spirit activity, almost like they were excited. They were getting ramped up. It's like, yeah, something exciting is going to happen here again. Let's get ready for it. You know, and the same thing, you know, while he's getting out of his house on his way to the bar and he's going to stop by and check out the soap shop, whether he likes being there or if he's doing something that used to be there, who knows? But he's picking up on that energy and being attracted to it.
By the way, that reminds me, slightly off subject, just real quick, with your theater. I'm going to need to talk to you about that. Because the publisher has me working on a book called Haunted Southern California, and I would love to include the theater in that book.
Awesome. Whenever you're ready, man. Like I said, you want to come up and we'll all show you some crazy things. I mean, I have it on my documentary for Paraflix, and that's been driving a lot of people asking me questions about it. So that'd be a perfect chance for you to come down. I'll give you the tour and let you see it. And they're not shy at all. So things happen, things move, furniture moves. It's nonstop. I have to do interviews with people in the theater, and I'm sitting in the lounge area or in the lobby area, just a little makeshift table and a laptop. I'm interviewing people, and like drinks are getting knocked off the shelves. Cell phones flip off the counters, and people are just like, "Oh, that was weird." And I'm like, yeah,
you know, you're just nonchalant about it now. Yeah, it happens all the time.
All the time. It's to the point where I won't take my keys out of my pocket and put it down anywhere. I will keep my keys on me because there's this one spirit there, and he acts like he's a tough guy and a scary guy, but he's not. But he is a total prankster, nonstop. I used to do these kind of feeds from the theater, and right. The internet wouldn't work, the computers wouldn't work, it'd just be nothing but trouble. And it was pretty much just him just messing with me, having a good time, knocking my drink over. It's like, dude, what are you doing? Stop that.
Yeah, but admit it, you had a good time too.
I do. I love hanging out with my spirits at the theater. They're all so great. Even the ones that were mobsters that they got into some pretty dark stuff. They're fine too. You know, they're little pranksters and they make jokes and they do this and that. And they mess with our maintenance crew a lot, unplugging things or moving furniture so they can't do something. It's pretty funny stuff. I gotta admit.
Yeah, we'll definitely plan on coming up.
Whenever you're ready, let me know.
Absolutely. Cool. Getting back to the Haunted of San Diego. And yes, I'm going to be mentioning that name. It's shameless self-promotion.
That's what you're here for. Promote.
The weirdest thing for me to write in the book. Now, I have the book broken up into sections, Old Town and Old Town Village. A lot of people don't know that the Old Town area is actually two separate entities, as it were. Where the Whaley House is technically Old Town Village and not Old Town. So I have it broken up between Old Town, Old Town Village, the Gas Lamp District, the Maritime District, and Point Loma. Now, Point Loma was the one that was a little bit odd for me to write. When I was doing research on places to include in the book, I was thinking, all right, so we have the lighthouse up at Cabrillo National Monument that I think most people who are familiar with it know that it has a very haunted history. And I was thinking, all right, so if that one's relegated, you know, to it's a single location, where am I going to put it in the book? So I thought, well, let's see if I can find anything else that's haunted up on the Point Loma area. And I came across Fort Rosecrans National Cemetery.
Cool.
At which point I was like, do I really want to write about this cemetery? What would my parents think because they're buried in this cemetery?
Oh, wow. So it's a personal thing.
It's a personal thing. So I kept thinking to myself, God, all right. And I'm like, I'm picturing my mother and father standing next to their grave with their hands on hips going, all right, well, if you're going to write about it, you'd better do a good job or else, you know? So it was one of those things. It's like, huh, do I really want to do it? But, when I found out the different haunts involved with the cemetery, it was a no-brainer that I was going to include it in the book. So, nice. You know, for those who haven't been up to the Point Loma area, I highly recommend it. The old lighthouse is got a really interesting history. It was one of the first lighthouses built in California, but didn't last very long because they found out that even though it seemed like it was in an ideal location, the top of the hill was generally covered in thick fog. So the lighthouse was all but useless. But the Fort Rosecrans Cemetery, you actually have to drive through it to get up to the Cabrillo National Monument. And the cemetery itself is considered one of the most beautiful cemeteries and the most beautiful national cemetery in the country. So the views it has on one side of the Pacific Ocean are just fabulous. And then you get a commanding view of North Island, the San Diego skyline, and the hills behind it. It's just a spectacular sight all the way around.
That's awesome. I mean, it just sounds like an amazing place to just travel through to really visit. I like cemeteries. They're very peaceful. They're beautiful places. Right. Of course, a memorial park, so it's like a nice park area and stuff. And some of the old statues and stuff, just the artwork is amazing. And you just get that sense of peace upon you. And I think that's really important. So that'd be a great cemetery for those who want to check out cemeteries, who love cemeteries, to go there. But I do recommend buying Brian's book first so you can get your information on it.
And I recommend it as well.
Yeah. Do your research, call, ask Brian, get his books, do the research on it, and then go do the discovery. So
now, you know, what you were talking about earlier as far as me going, I try and go every out of the books. And you had mentioned it before that there, that's really the best way to get the history and the stories and things like that. Now, with Haunted Universal Studios, what a lot of people don't realize is that, and I mean, it was the toughest part of the job with Haunted Universal Studios, is that I had to get year-long passes and go to the amusement park repeatedly. I mean, it was just horrible. But really? every single story, paranormal story in that book is from an employee of Universal Studios. Not one thing was taken. Well, okay. Now to actually, that's wrong. There was one story that was taken that I didn't get from the horse's mouth per se, and was the story of John Stites' ghost. And the reason for that is the person who discovered John Stites was one of the head producers for Halloween Horror Nights. And I did try and get a hold of him, but was unable to do so. But the story was so compelling that I just had to put it in there. But here's the thing. About a year after the book was written, Bob and I were vending at the Midsummer Scream, and it just so happened that the producer was at the event giving a talk with Slash, who had done the music for the, at that time, the upcoming Halloween Horror Nights. And I never mentioned the man's name in the book because I didn't have his permission. So it was like, I'm not going to name drop. But he was walking by our table. He stopped, looked over at the book and goes, "Are you guys the author of this book?" And we're like,
yeah,
we are. I absolutely love it.
Awesome.
So the amount of research that I did on that story alone, just because of the fact I didn't have it from the horse's mouth, and no, I'm not calling him a horse.
just his mouth.
Yeah. You know, I wanted to make sure that I got it as correct as possible. And here's one thing for anybody that's thinking about writing a book and using the internet for their research. Didn't do it, but one of the problems you're going to run across is the fact that the internet can be had by anybody. So anybody could put stories up. Wikipedia, one of the worst ones. Never try anything on Wikipedia. I have a Wikipedia account, so I'm going to change it to suit my tastes. What I use it for is to correct history. But, you know, so what you have to do, like, if I'm writing, say, one chapter of 1,500 to 2,500 words, I'll end up going to 100 to 200 websites for that one story. And what I do is I read each one and start making notes of all the ones that have the same information. Now, it's still not 100%, of course, but if you find that only five of 200 have a story in it, you can pretty much throw it out. But if you find that 150 to or more have the same story, it generally is an accepted, that's all I'm going to put, an accepted piece of history or an accepted ghost story. So, you know, I mean, I literally, the hardest part about writing these books isn't the writing, it's the research. I literally spend thousands of hours doing research on the subject. And that's just the historical part of it. The ghost stories are actually fairly easy because, like you said, I go and I talk to people, so I am getting those from the horse's mouth.
That's what you got to do. You know, it's like back when you were in school and everyone sat in a circle and somebody whispered something into somebody's ear about something, and then it goes around the circle and the story kind of changes a bit until it gets back to that person. That's what a lot of those bloggers telling these little ghost stories are. They're taking a little bit of information, then they kind of add a little bit more to it. All of a sudden we get this crazy long story that just doesn't really make a lot of sense anymore. But we know that something happened somewhere at some time, so that kind of gets you started. But it's the true value of it is to find those people who are there, who are living right in that environment, who know the stories and can tell you the truth and their personal experience, because that's what people want to hear. Those history stuff, that's awesome. Everyone loves history. But the true accounts of true paranormal stories, that's golden. People want to hear that stuff.
Yeah, exactly. You know, one of the things that drives me crazy is the Ghosts and Legends of Alcatraz. The amount of time that I spent researching just the history of Alcatraz was incredible. And I had gotten together with the National Park Service and the Alcatraz Prison Archives. And all of the history pretty much came from the archives and the National Park Service historical records, okay? Which is something that, you know, Bob and I do just because, you know, we want to make sure our history is as accurate as possible. And somebody put a review up about the Alcatraz book saying that we obviously got our, or did our research watching television. And, I mean, it was just like, oh, God, I just want to reach through and wring their necks. It's like, no, we did not do it on television, you know, and it's just like, oh my Lord. But you know what I'm gonna do.
Yeah, like, why would they say that? I mean, really?
Well, you know, there's a lot of Alcatraz experts out there that really don't know much about it. There's an author, and I'm not gonna say his name, I don't know personally. But he has about, I'd say, 12 or so books out from different states. And one of them is from here in Southern California. And I actually purchased his book years ago before I started writing. And because the publisher has me working on Haunted Southern California right now, I was like, okay, that's a huge area. What am I, you know, I got to find, you know, other locations that I may not know about that might be, you know, interesting to put in the book. I remembered the book, I picked it up and I started thumbing through it. And he has a chapter in there about the Queen Mary, which I read it and I'm like, what the heck is he talking about? I mean, there's not one thing in it that has anything to do with actual history or the paranormal that anybody who has gone to the Queen Mary knows. So I'm like, okay, well, this is weird. Where'd this guy get this? And then I start looking at what he wrote about Calico. And I'm like, okay, well, I've got a book out about that. And that's another place that I went and talked to every single person I think that works there. And what he's talking about, I'm like, well, I never heard that. And no, you know, it's one of the things now that made me even more determined to make sure that anybody that picks up one of our books knows that they are getting the closest accuracy humanly possible. So,
Yeah, and that's the difference. I mean, you can see it in your books and stuff. The Ghost of Calico, which we talked about a while ago. You get in there, and you're talking to these people, and you're hearing the real-time stories as they know it, not just some person who saw something online somewhere and heard that story and told somebody else, and they got their own interpretation of that story, or it just kind of gets misled a little bit down the road. But your stories are directly from the people, and that's right. The most important thing. That's why I think everybody really appreciates your books, because you're in there. The Queen Mary, I can't think of anybody that can write a better book about the Queen Mary than what you and Bob
Thank you. Have done.
I mean, you guys.
Thank you.
You guys are there more than anybody I know. I've known you guys a long time now, and I always thought that if I was going to go to an expert on the Queen Mary, it would be you guys, absolutely.
Well, I'll tell you what, and it's something that both Bob and I regret. Matt Schultz, who is now running the, well, hopefully he'll be back running the paranormal tours and investigative tour. I wish he had had the job at the time. And you know that we kind of started off on the wrong foot between the three of us, but we've actually become fairly good friends now. As a matter of fact, Matt wrote the foreword for Haunted Heart of San Diego.
So, oh, that's
Matt,
awesome.
If you're listening, I appreciate it. It was a great foreword. Thank you so much
for that. Very cool. Good job, Matt.
Matt goes down there, or when the ship was open, I should say, he would be down there, and he has got so much stuff set up to research the ship. That some of the things that we've discussed and talked about that he has found would have been so good in the book. So if we ever have to do an update, we're definitely going to be including Matt in the update. Because, I mean, there are some things going on at the Queen Mary now, especially that she's been closed for so long, that are just off the hook. So from what we've been hearing, some of the security guards, again, are scared to go on board because there's so much stuff going on. And that actually happened back in the 90s when the ship shut down after Disney gave up the lease, that a lot of the security guards that were stationed there to keep people off the ship, again, would not go into the ship, but would just, you know, walk around the outside. And some of them didn't want to do that because they saw things on the deck. So needless to say, we want to get on board and get on board quick. Oh, and on that note, good news. Cool. I had heard from Queen Mary International that they met with the city of Long Beach, and the city of Long Beach is 100% committed to keeping the ship in tip-top shape, and they're going to they're shooting for early spring, from what I understand, to get the ship open again. So we're keeping our fingers crossed.
That's great news. Everyone was like worried that we're going to lose the ship. I mean, that's a big part of Long Beach. That belongs to us growing up.
Yeah.
And just being a part of it. I mean, it'd be horrible for us to lose that. And it's such a great ship. So Absolutely. Such great history. We can't lose that. It's very important to us.
Yeah. Well, now there still are a lot of people out there saying, well, I heard that they're going to take it out and sink it. They're going to dismantle it there.
What?
And they did, believe it or not, they did requisition somebody to look into the feasibility of dismantling her where she sits, taking it out into the ocean and sinking her and making her a natural reef. Or not a natural reef, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, barrier. Yeah.
Right. Or refurbishing her and keeping her open as a hotel and museum.
Yeah.
When the report came back, they found that it was basically all the same cost, regardless of what they did. So it would have been between $150 million and $900 million to scrap her, sink her, or keep her the way she is. So the city decided, well, we don't want to give up the $94 million a year that she brings in, so we'll keep her. So Luckily, money wins out. Yeah. So, you know, for those of us who love the Queen Mary, that is really good news.
And to have it fully restored and taken care of, that's a huge thing because it just makes it better for everybody.
Exactly. So hopefully if they decide to sell the lease again, they'll give it to somebody who will actually take care of the ship. And hopefully the city will take over its responsibilities to monitor what the lessee is doing.
Cool. Does that mean they're going to change the carpet that you guys put in there?
Actually, I didn't. That was Bob.
Okay.
But it was pretty gaudy. So, you know.
Okay.
Maybe if they do decide to. Yeah, I was going to say, maybe if they do decide to change it, we can go down and cut out a little piece for Bob so he has some of the carpet that he helped install years ago.
I want a piece of the carpet just to say I have a piece of the carpet from the Queen Mary. So put me on the list.
We'll get you one too. Absolutely.
Awesome. Very cool.
So yeah, I keep veering off from what we wanted to talk about. I'm going to concentrate a little bit on the Old Town and Old Town Village area.
Cool.
Are you familiar with the El Campo Santo Cemetery down there?
I've heard of it. I have not personally been there.
Okay. Now, have you been to now? There is a great Mexican restaurant down there called Cafe Coyote or Coyote Cafe. That's pretty bad. I always get those two mixed up. Whether Cafe comes first or we'll have California.
Yeah.
And it's right there near the El Campo Santo Cemetery. Now, Ben. We were down there having lunch, and I was asking the manager, you know, whether they had any haunting activity, and it is in the book, by the way. And he was telling me that it did, and that there were people still buried under the restaurant. And I was like, buried under the restaurant? What are you talking about? And he goes, what, you didn't know that this was part of the El Campo Santo Cemetery? And I was like, no. And now the El Campo Santo Cemetery is up the way, maybe about a block and a half. And it's just this little tiny cemetery. And so I was talking to him about it and he goes, come here. And so he takes me out front and he goes, do you see that? And I'm looking and he's pointing at this little gold colored, I think it was brass marker in the street that says, gravesite. And I was like, what the heck is that? And he said, yeah. He said, years ago, when they put the street through, the contractors were supposed to move the cemetery, but they did what they did in the movie Poltergeist and only moved the headstones. So even to this day, if you go down there and walk around that section of Old Town Village, in the street, on the sidewalks, you'll see these little markers, and I have a picture of it in the book.
Are they round?
They're little round, probably. They're little round markers, probably about the size. I wonder if I can get the picture up on this.
Because I think I've seen
about
that.
The size of
I've
a half that. Dollar, and it says gravesite, and every place you see that. Is where somebody is buried. There's still a body buried there.
Wow.
And I just found that just like, are you kidding? I mean, that's just mind-boggling to me that they would do that. All right. I don't know whether you'll be able to see it. Let me see if I can. Let's see. I got to go this way. It's backwards. But that little marker right there says gravesite on it, and that's one of the gravesite markers where a person is buried. Wow. So over the years, and I got this from a few of the proprietors of the shop that work in Old Town Village, that even to this day, there are times when construction will be going on and the people there know if they found a gravesite. because the power will start to flicker or the power will just completely go off. Sal at the Old Town Saloon said that there was one year, he said this was years ago, that the power just went out for, it was like 2.5 days. The electric company couldn't figure out, they couldn't find anything wrong. And they were like trying, okay, well, they were checking these transformers and checking this and checking that. And then as mysteriously as it went out, it came back on. Well, it turns out that the power had gone out at the same time that they had been doing construction and found a coffin. And it came back on after the person had been reinterred. And he says things like that. Yeah. So, and he said things like that happen, you know, quite often down there whenever they're doing construction. It's like, oh, they found a body because the power would go out or, you know, flicker and just do weird things with, and no one could understand why. And I heard that from about probably 3, maybe 4 proprietors down there. And I just thought that was just interesting, you know. The cemetery, have you heard of Yankee Jim Robinson?
No.
He is one of the spirits who purportedly haunt the Whaley House.
Oh, was he the one that was hung in the backyard or whatever?
You've been in the Whaley House, correct?
Yes.
So if you walk in the front door and you turn to the right, you come into the parlor. Just to the left, you will see a big arch. That is where the tree was that Yankee Jim was hung.
Okay, yes. Okay.
So, yeah, so that's actually part of the house now. The house wasn't built when Yankee Jim was hung.
Yeah, they built the house on the side afterwards, yeah.
Correct. And even though Thomas Whaley was at the hanging, he decided to build the house there anyway. I'm not sure I could have done that, but...
That's kind of weird. You know, that's kind of weird.
Yeah. But today, Yankee Jim would never have been... Well, he probably wouldn't have been convicted. He definitely would not have faced the death penalty. And it most likely would have been a mistrial. Do you know what he was hung for?
No.
Stealing a rowboat. Stealing a rowboat. Him and two of his friends got drunk, took a rowboat out, rowed it around San Diego Bay, and then left it unharmed on a beach. So the owners of the rowboat got it back, but they found out who did it, and apparently Yankee Jim was convicted on his reputation from Northern California, which was most likely false to begin with. And even as the buckboard that Yankee Jim was being hung on started to move away, he didn't believe they were actually going to go through with it. He thought they were just going to make an example of him at the last minute. They were going to say, all right, we made our point. But when he finally realized that he tried to back up on the buckboard, and because of that, he slowly fell off the back of it so his neck did not break, which is normally what happens in the hanging.
Yeah.
The neck breaks and you're dead. Well, this wasn't quick. He apparently, I'm not going to go into it, but it was pretty gruesome from everything I read. But during his trial, the prosecutor was the judge's father, which right there would have been ended in a mistrial.
Yeah.
The owners of the rowboat were on the jury. So it was just one of those things. It's just like, how can you even have a trial with that sort of thing? But here's what's interesting. The, other two were tried by the same judge, same prosecutor, same jury, and they basically just got 6 months in jail. So wow. if you ever wonder why Yankee Jim Robinson's a little upset, now you know.
Absolutely. And he didn't even really steal it. That's technically a joyride.
Yeah. Yeah. It was technically just a joyride.
But they wanted to make an example out of him based on what they decided, whatever, and just gave him an unfair trial and hung him. They basically killed a man. Terrible.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, yeah, you know, you shouldn't steal somebody's rowboat, but you shouldn't swing for it either.
Yeah. So you should do your time, pick up garbage for the rest of the year or something. I mean, come on.
Exactly. Now, one of the things that I found really challenging about this book is I started writing it, or we started writing it in March of 2020. When did COVID hit?
Yeah, pretty much then. The second week in March.
Right. I never want to have to try and do research on a book during a pandemic ever again.
Wow.
I mean, I did as much research as I can. And I was going to the library until all the libraries closed. And believe it or not, I do go to the libraries a lot. And it's kind of sound kind of sad, but authors are kind of the same as the internet. You never know if they actually got their information from the right source or just decided to put it in the, you know, like the one guy I was telling you about that wrote the paranormal book. He just made it up whole cloth.
Yeah.
You know, but I do like to, you know, use the written word as well as the internet and things like that for as much of research as I can. And then round it out and verify with talking to people. So that said, everything was closed. I couldn't really talk to people. Okay.
That's gotta be so hard.
Yeah, it was not easy. So I did as much as I could while everything was shut down. And then the manuscript for the Haunted America series books are always due in the end of March, but the photos are due at the end of February. Why they do that is beyond me, because if you don't have a manuscript, how do you know what photos are going to be in it? So I always set a deadline of the end of February to have both the photos and the manuscript in. So things finally started to open up around November, December. That's when I started going down to San Diego and trying to cram in as many interviews as I possibly could. So the book was actually somewhat written, but then crammed everything into 1 month to finish the entire book. And with that, I would say it was about 1/3 finished. So I had to write 2/3 of the book within 1 month, basically, of turning the manuscript in. I never want to have to do that again. It was just like, oh my God, no. So yeah, not an easy proposition, but you know what? I did. And I made a lot of friends down in San Diego, which I never want to, you know, it was fantastic. There was a guy by the name of Al Sorkin, who works at the San Diego Maritime Museum. I could not have gotten the Star of India or the Berkeley chapters done without his help. He kept having me send them to him, and he would send them back on, okay, you need to change this. This didn't happen, but this did. So, I mean, we literally would go back and forth, you know, with, I'd write it and then I'd rewrite it from what he said and then send it back. And he goes, okay, that's good. But now you got to change it. So, Al was absolutely fantastic. And, you know, we're actually good friends now. Sal over at the Old Town Saloon, as soon as everything gets back as much to normal as possible, he wants us coming down and doing an investigation at the saloon. Which is perfect because we don't find any ghosts. We always have the spirits, if you get my meaning. Fred's Mexican restaurant is another one where the manager sat down with me And again, when I was writing it, I would send it to him, and he would, you know, say, okay, yeah, that's kind of, but you need to, you know, so the having people who work at these locations, know these locations, you can never underestimate the their input and how much they bring to a book for an author. It's just something that you can't match otherwise. That's something else. If anybody, you know, is thinking about writing a book, get it from the people who are there. Simple as that.
Cause they're living it. That's the best source, right? To the source of information.
Yeah, exactly. Perfect.
That's why your books are so good.
Thank you. You know, I do appreciate that, Stefan, seriously. You know, it means a lot. You know, and like one of the things for me, a lot of people are like, well, you know, don't you get upset when you get bad reviews? And I'm like, no, not really. What I do is I read the bad review, see what they didn't like, and try and change it for the next book. You have to learn from what people are telling you. And if somebody doesn't, you know, like something, and, you know, of course I'm not talking about somebody who just goes on there to bash because they want to bash. There is a certain author who has sent their friends onto Amazon to bash our Queen Mary book because the person doesn't like us getting recognition for it. So, you know, we can pretty much tell who, you know, who those people are. But then there are those who, you know, give you, say, a 2 or 3 star review rather than 5. This is the worst book I've ever read, where you go, oh, okay. Oh my, you know what? They're right. I need to change that for the next book to make sure that doesn't happen again. Because if they did like at least some of the book, maybe they'll buy it again and go, oh, okay. Hey, look, he changed it, or it's been changed. It's better. You know, so for anybody, any of the listeners out there who have read our books and you have constructive criticism, feel free to send them along, because we're never going to get better unless you do. And we take that very seriously, because we don't write for ourselves per se. We write for our readers, and it's important to us that they get what they want, if that makes sense.
It totally makes sense, because you're writing the book for the readers, but what you're getting out of it is the experience of going there and getting those stories from the people who are there. That's what you're getting out of it. And you're just feeding that back to the people who want to read about it. So it's a win-win situation. And they have to critique it, because if you're going out there and you're putting a book out and nobody's saying, you know, this is wrong or whatever, then how are you going to get better at what you're doing? The progression.
Exactly.
You know? Exactly. So we just had in this book, let's make sure we cover that in this next book, because people are going to look for that. And it just gets better, better every time.
Exactly. And, you know, we really do appreciate the input. Like I said, it makes us learn. And I never, no matter how old I get, I never want to stop learning.
So, absolutely.
Yeah. But, you know, I do have to admit that there are certain things that I get out of going and doing the research. I like to write about places that I have always wanted to see, that I have always wanted to learn about, that I have always wanted to go and visit. So if I write about them, it is an excuse to go there. And if I am writing about it, it now becomes tax deductible.
Oh, look so, at that. Bonus.
Yeah. You know, so, okay, all of a sudden, because I'm writing about the location I'm visiting, the hotel is tax deductible, my food is tax deductible, my mileage. So, and then there's the royalty checks. I don't mind those at all.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, you know, it's right. So for me, at least, it's a symbiotic relationship between the readers and myself. I do write specifically because I want my readers to enjoy what they're reading. There is somebody by the name of Joe Nichols. I'm not sure if you've heard of him from the Society for Skeptical Inquiry.
Yeah, the skeptic people who are always critiquing everything.
Right. Now, Nichols says that he is a paranormal investigator and he is lying through his teeth. Now, he did a review of Ghost of the Queen Mary when it first came out, and it was scathing. I mean, just really? scathing. He was upset because we didn't put any actual evidence in the book. We didn't put in raw data in the book. We didn't, put in anything that could make people like him believe that everything was real. And I'm looking at this review and I'm going, dude, open up a dictionary, go to the letter E and look up the word entertainment. You know, it's like, dude, we're not writing a freaking textbook.
Yeah, it's we're not a science book.
Right. We're writing something that hopefully people will enjoy, people will have fun reading, and people will get the urge to, hey, I'd like to go check this out. Yeah. We're not writing this to try and teach people how to ghost hunt or, you know, analyze audio and things like that. It's like, dude, it's entertainment. Come on.
Yeah.
And those are the type of people that you just kind of shake your head and go, okay, whatever. But
yeah,
you know,
they don't get it yet. So it's like, that's fine. He can go be his paranormal skeptic guy on the side. And when he's really opened up and then realizes, oh, these are the ghost stories that people want to read so they can go visit the Queen Mary and enjoy it and talk about it. It's like, right. Dude, we're not showing the mathematical equation of why a spirit exists in this kind of environment. That's a different book.
Exactly. You know, and like with Haunted Heart of San Diego, one of the locations that we write about is Cousin's Candy Store. Okay, so let's face it. You can't get much better than that. You go into a candy store, you get some candy and look for ghosts. How much better can it get? You know? That's what we're... excuse me. I guess in a way, we like to write... kind of like a travel series in a way. Our books, yeah, they give you a good history of the places we write about, but it also gives you an idea of places that you can go and you can stay that are haunted. You know, like with Haunted Heart of San Diego, the Cosmopolitan Hotel is haunted, and it's a hotel. The Hotel Del Coronado, yeah, most of us can't afford it, but you know, it's a haunted hotel. You can go and stay there. The Horton Grand, another one. You can go and visit Wyatt Earp because he said to haunt the hotel. Then you can, Fred's restaurant, Mexican restaurant, Cafe Coyote restaurant, the Casa de Reyes, which used to be the El Fandango. You know, so you can go and stay at a haunted location, eat at a haunted location, and then go down to the USS Midway, the Star of India, the Berkeley, the Maritime Museum, up to the lighthouse. And so you've got haunted places to stay, haunted places to eat, and haunted entertainments.
Absolutely.
You can't get much better than that, you know? That's really what we're, you know, trying to do is get people to look at the paranormal as, you know, not necessarily something that has to be taken seriously the whole time. Now, sure, you know, if you're going out and doing a serious investigation, take that serious. But if you want to just go out and have a little bit of fun with the paranormal, feel free. I'm sure the ghosts don't mind. As you and I both know, a lot of times that we get our best evidence when we're not grilling the spirits, but having fun with the spirits. So
absolutely.
You know, they like to join in too.
Yeah, so, that's why I do my music parties for them, to give them a chance to enjoy themselves and not worry about what I'm looking for.
Yeah, exactly. So,
and I get great evidence out of it too. It's like, oh, you're dancing, right. Cool. Let's film that. That's awesome.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they were people too. So
absolutely.
you know.
And people got to remember that.
Yeah, when we die, you know, as long as we have our free will, which I'm pretty sure we do, we're not going to change.
Yeah,
you know, the only difference. Right. The only difference is instead of going out and looking for ghosts, I'm going to be going out and haunting people that pissed me off. So, you know, a little bit of a change, but, you know, nothing major, as it were.
So we only have about 4 minutes left, and I want to make sure that people know what's coming up next. I know you and I are going to see each other in, what, a couple of weeks now?
A couple of weeks at the Vulture City Paracon, yep.
And you're going to be...
I'm really looking...
You're doing a set, workshop, right?
Not a workshop, but I'm going to be giving a talk, and hopefully Bob is going to be there. Bob has been kind of tied up with business sometimes. Like, okay, I think I'm good to go. Then he's like, oh, I can't go. So I'm hoping Bob will be there, but if not, I will be there giving a talk titled Not Your Stephen King's Tommyknockers. I thought that was rather appropriate because I did find a little bit of a connection between Tommyknockers and the Vulture Mine at Vulture City. So I'm going to be kind of bringing that up, as well as Ghost Mine, and they're going to be there as well. So I'm going to be talking about these little mini miners. You know, that should be a lot of fun. In November, I will be speaking at the History, Haunts, and Legends Paracon in Jefferson, Texas. Cool. I've done that a couple times, and that's always a lot of fun. If you have never been to Jefferson, Texas, that is a must visit for anybody into the paranormal. That town is extremely haunted in many locations, and it's just a lot of fun. I'm doing my vending. I pretty much vend at least once a month now at a bunch of different events. We will be vending again at Midsummer Scream. It is coming back.
Cool.
Thank God.
Great
Halloween event in July for those that haven't been there. I highly recommend going. The LA County Fair, we're going to be at that when it opens up again, which I think it's going to, because they actually did a little mini LA Fair. I think it's going on right now, as a matter of fact. I've only had it up for about 2 months, so it's still kind of a work in progress, but I did get a website up, and pretty soon you're going to be able to buy autographed copies of the books on there. But I also have a blog that I started, and I write under the name Paratraveler. And what [S2] Cool. [S1] The blogs are so people can go to do exactly what I was just talking to you about. Right now I've got two San Diego blogs up because San Diego's so big, I split it. Virginia City, one that I know you're very familiar with. So what it does, like for Virginia City, it tells people where they can go to stay in a haunted hotel in Virginia City. Case in point, the Silver Queen. It tells people the different haunted things that they can do in Virginia City, the different locations where they can go and eat, in Virginia City. Now, because a lot of times, you know, you don't get restaurants that are haunted, especially in like a small town like Virginia City, although there are haunted restaurants in Virginia City that I mentioned. A lot of times, you know, I can't make it everything haunted. Kernville, Kern River Valley, that's one of the areas. But it's designed so people who don't want to have to join a team and do an investigation, you know, can take their boyfriend or girlfriend out for a weekend and just have a good time having a paranormal weekend of their own. So, you know, hopefully people will enjoy that. And if you don't mind, I know we're out of time, but just really quick, for those who know about Silver City Ghost Town in Bodfish, California, that's up in the Kernville area. I have the sad news of saying that J. Paul Corlew, the owner, has passed away. but his son Sean is going to take over the ghost town, and you can book your own private investigations. It's a very haunted ghost town, so you know, keep that in mind. But we're going to be holding a memorial in November for Jay. So you can go to my Facebook page, Brian Clune author, and we'll have information about when the memorial is going to be. Jay was a great person, stubborn, but Jay and I became family, as well as the actual owner of the ghost town, Izzy the ghost town cat. He's still with us, thank God.
Nice.
So, very cool. Sorry, kind of went off there.
That's fine. People should know that information. He was a good person with a great personality. So everybody should be a part of that. Go up there, you know, see the sun, check it out, check out the town. It's a great place, you know, highly suggested for everybody. So
yeah. Have you been there?
I have not been there. It's been on my list to try to get out there, but I'm so busy right now. I'm doing so much paranormal stuff, and I took the leap forward and got into the paranormal TV stuff. And once that starts rolling, I'm just getting hit with stuff all the time. I got all these projects going on. I'm like trying to figure it out. I'm like, that's all great, but I don't want to get away from this. I want to continue doing the things I love, going to these places and being a part of it, you know, and writing the stories or filming my stuff there. I just want to be able to continue doing that instead of having these list of things that I'm obligated to do. It's like, wow.
I'll tell you what, this is an open invitation to you. As soon as Bob gets all of these massive business things done that he gets done, he wants to go up there. We're going to rent the bunkhouse, which is at the Sierra Gateway Cottages. The Bob Hope's nephew haunts the place, and he is very active. So we're going to rent that. We're going to go down to Silver City, do an investigation down at Silver City. You are invited to come up. Awesome. It's a very large cabin. There's enough room for 1, 2, 3, 4, like six beds in the place. Wow. So yeah, you're definitely invited, and I will make sure to let you know when we do that.
Thank you, Brian. That means a lot to me. I really love to get out there and do that, and love seeing you guys all the time, regardless of what we're doing. So that means a lot. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, I have to admit, I'm really looking forward to hanging out with you, Scott Grunwald, and a few other people at the Paracon. So
it's going to be a blast. I'm
looking forward to it. It is. Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah, I'm sure the ghosts will get sick of us. Wild guys. Like, what are these guys doing now? They're not even paying attention.
Yeah, they should. Absolutely. Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right, buddy. We have to wrap it up. I want to say to everybody out there, you go to Brian Clune, paranormalauthor.com, and you can look at this large library he has now of books. Like I said, coming from me, I'm just going to put it out there. I totally endorse Brian and everything that he does because he does it really well. And when you read his books, you can see the deep passion that he has in getting the story straight right from the people who live these experiences. So that's awesome. If you love these stories, go check it out and just continue watching Brian through his career. He's going to keep you guys entertained with all these great stories that you can learn about and pass on to other people that might want to hear about these stories. So thank you so much. Thanks, Brian.
Thank you, Stefan. That means a lot coming from you. Thank you.
Always, man. Thanks for, and I'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Absolutely.
All right,
the first one's on me.
Awesome. Thanks, man. Cool.
You got it.
All right.
I'll talk to you later, Stefan.
Have a good night.
Thanks.
You too. All right, you guys.
Bye.
Brian Clune, everybody. The guy is absolutely amazing. I love hanging out with him and spending time with him and doing some investigative work. So go ahead and check it out once again. That is Brian Clune, paranormal author. .com. Check out his books. You can find his books on Amazon, I believe, a little biography and stuff about that. It's great. In addition to that, I do want to say a shout out to my sponsors real quick. Chili Man Salsa, making the paranormally hot salsa with all the flavor that we love. There's no vinegar involved, not needed with this stuff. Mike at P-Tech, making me all my custom equipment that I love to use And if you come to see us at Vulture City, I will have some of that stuff with me. I'll be able to show you guys what I'm talking about. And, well, you know, I'm going to be emceeing the event, so I will be spending time with every one of the speakers and going over equipment. If you guys are going to be at Vulture City, come talk to me. Come spend some time with me. Let's talk equipment. Let's talk paranormal. I want to give a shout-out to Lizzie Wizzy's Crafty Creations, Liz Johnson making us all those wonderful scarves, hats keeping us warm as we're bumping around in the dark in those crazy cold asylums at night. And, of course, Daniel's Toy Empire. If you're looking for those Ghostbuster toys and stuff, those collectibles, he's got them all. And if he doesn't, tell him what you want, and he will find it for you. So that's going to be it, you guys. Hopefully you can hear, if you missed the show tonight, and I don't know why I'm telling you this now, because if you're missing the show tonight, you're not going to see this part, but you will be able to hear the audio feed from the show next week on liveparanormal.com. And if you have not checked out my show, season one, streaming on Paraflix right now, shame on you. Go do it right now, and I will feel much better. There's a couple of great episodes on there. We're talking about my haunted theater. That's on there. A lot of people are asking me about that. I got people wanting to come from Europe to check it out. Just do yourself a favor and check it out and let me know what you think. You know, I got the new YouTube channel coming up with all this stuff. The videos you're seeing here are going to be on there so people can go back and watch again if they keep missing it. Or if they just absolutely love the show, this is your chance to keep watching it over and over again. And don't forget to tell a friend. If someone's out there and they're interested in the paranormal, tell them to check my show out. Come listen to My Darkest Hour. You get to see wonderful people that are in the paranormal, like Ryan Clune, who's absolutely amazing. So with that being said, we will see you guys next time right here on My Darkest Hour. So good night.